I'm Julie Burstein, and I'm here today for Leonard Lopate. The Big Lebowski is one of Jeff Bridges' most popular movies, at least in my household, and for many, The Dude is his signature role. So when he co-authors a book titled The Dude and the Zen Master, we think we know who the dude is. The Zen Master is his good friend Bernie Glassman, one of America's most renowned Zen Roshis. And the book, which is published by Blue Rider Press, is a conversation between the two about art, life, and the ability to abide. I am so happy it brings Jeff Bridges and Bernie Glassman to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Welcome.
Yeah, Thank you. Thanks for having us.
One of the things that I loved at the beginning of this book is the dude becomes a kind of center for your conversation about what it means to abide. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the dude abides. That's one of the, one of the lines that is quoted most often in Lebowski.
And there are lots of T-shirts.
And lots of T-shirts. I guess the Zen, a spin on that would be Bernie can get a little bit more formal about this for us, but the dude abides in the land of no abiding, abides nowhere, and therefore abides everywhere. A lot of people might not see that in the movie. I remember when we were making the movie, when Bernie came up with the idea, he says, hey, let's make a movie about, or let's make a book about all the Zen that's in Lebowski. I said, what are you talking about? That was never, you know, we never talked about any Zen or any kind of spirituality when we were making the movie. But the movie's riddled with all sorts of things that can be taken in a very Zen-like way. What do you have to say about the abiding line?
Yeah, one of the a very important line uttered by or heard by a very poor, illiterate Chinese wood collector who knew nothing about Zen or Buddhism or philosophy or anything like that. One day he was carrying his load of wood and he heard this guy chanting from something called the Diamond Sutra, and it said, abiding nowhere, raise the mind of compassion. And so this abiding nowhere the dude abides. But abiding nowhere, in the Buddhist sense, means not being attached to any one thing, which means abiding everywhere. And once we're attached to anything, we're stuck. Our house is coalesced into the things we're stuck to. So abiding, the dude abides is this freedom of being totally at one with what's happening and whatever's happening, reacting to that, and it's sometimes good, sometimes bad, sometimes cry, sometimes laugh, free motion, not restricted by one's conditioning.
Another piece that really caught me as I read the book was the three ideas that, Bernie, you have for your organization, Zen Peacemakers. Can you talk a little bit about that, about those three principles?
Yeah. A while back, I came up with three tenets. I had done a lot of work with the homeless in Yonkers, New York, and I now was ready to do something new. And I actually decided it was my 55th birthday, I would do a retreat and figure out what am I going to do next. And I decided to do it in one of the power sites of this country, and I chose the seats, the White House, the Capitol. Did it on the steps of the Capitol. My birthday happens to be January 18th. That year, 94, it snowed the whole time. It turned out to be the coldest in 50 years in Washington, D.C. And I had invited people to join me if they wanted. And there was 20 of us sitting in a circle in the snow on the steps of the Capitol. The Capitol was closed. And to think about what we're going to do next. And for me, what came out of that was the idea of creating the Zen Peacemakers, a container for people who wanted to do social action. And I came up with three tenets for those that wanted to do this. The first, not knowing, to enter situations, to try to enter situations with total openness, not being attached to anything.
And not knowing, feeling like you don't have to go in thinking you know the answer already.
Well, most of us do. Most of us go in saying we know how to fix this. I mean, we've gone to school, we got PhDs, we've had 20 years experience, so we know what to do, man. And so I'm saying, keep all of that knowledge, but don't be attached to it. Don't bring any of that to the new situation. Go in totally open, totally not knowing. And then second, bear witness means stay in that. Stay in that situation until you grok it, until you become it. And then the third tenet, and I call that tenet bearing witness, so bear witness to the situation. And then the third is loving actions. Do something about it. And I feel, I have faith, that the doing will come out of the entering the situation not knowing and bearing witness to it. The loving actions will arise out of that. So those are the three tenets. The Zen peacemakers now have their affiliate groups around the world, about 160 different groups. And I'm sort of the grandfather, but I don't have an institution for the whole thing. I'm not no control. We're just bound by those three tenets.
The three tenets really struck me as the parent of teenagers, as useful also when you're dealing with kids, because I think as parents we often go in and think, all right, I know how to fix this for you. And after reading that, I thought, oh, let me just be here and witness what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard those tenets before, and hearing them just now, I heard them in kind of in a fresh way. And when you were saying bearing witness was kind of staying in that not knowing place, and that's an interesting thing that I just kind of heard for the first time. That's that staying, and then out of that staying and out of that emptiness, there will be this thing that will kind of surface almost I guess naturally is what you can say, that natural compassion that we all have in us. If we can be quiet, it'll rise.
Yeah.
I think it's that quest to be quiet, though, that most of us wrestle with, especially in this day and age where there's so much going on. The idea that A, you're not supposed to know, and B, you actually need to open up and let things in. And maybe I'll turn this to you, Jeff. Do you have thoughts of how you've done that for yourself to be able to open up to what is going on around you?
Yeah, I'm trying to. I'm feeling what we're talking about right now, and I'm feeling it apply to what we're talking about in this. Not knowing. I haven't figured this out how to say it. I'm just going to let it spill out and. We can all talk about it.
Yeah.
But not know about your knowing. Even that you say I wish I could not know, but I'm knowing.
Right.
Well, try not knowing about your not knowing about your knowing, and give her some space to even that. Allow that and bear witness to that. Bear witness to this. I know. And I say, oh, interesting. Okay. Be with that for a second. See what that is like. It's a kind of a spin. What do you think, Burns?
Yeah. Well, the one of the traditional ways of doing this, of course, is meditation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what comes to mind.
In meditation, you're supposed to not be focused on your ideas. You just let them come and go. So you're not holding on, not being attached to anything. You're putting yourself in a state of not knowing. And then you got to sit there for a while. You got to bear witness to it. You can't just say, "Oh, I did it. I'm out of here.
Done now."
Yeah. So you spend some time, and out of that will come some loving actions. And I call that bearing witness to the oneness of life. But that's not the only way. So in your acting, when you describe how you go about your acting, that's exactly, you're using those three tenets.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Way before we met, you were already doing that as your mode.
Jeff, can you talk about that? How do you see that?
My method or something, and it came not really through Zen, but through my mom and dad and my brother, who my acting teachers, but. you know, my dad and I feel the same way. You know, learn your lines. You got to know your lines so well that you can that you're not trying to remember them when you're doing the scene. And I said, okay. And then he would used to say, okay, now go out of the room and, you know, come back in. So I'm not talking. I'm maybe 8 years old. You know, I'm working on a scene from Sea Hunt, right? An old series he had back in the early '60s. And he would say, now come back in and do it completely some other different way that you know you, that you don't that you aren't prepared to you know, haven't prepared. Just come in and do it another way. And I said, okay. And then he says, now don't just wait for my mouth to stop talking and then say your line. You got to let what I'm saying have some kind of effect on what you're going to say. I said, oh, okay, okay. And so, you know, it's kind of a simple thing, but I've carried that into my acting now where I, you know, prepare. I'm in my hotel room. I look at the scene. I try to imagine all the different ways I can do it and, you know, the best way, you know, this way, that way. And I memorize my lines. And when I get there on the day, most often, it's nothing like I expected it to be, you know. It was supposed to be a sunny day. I had lines that sang about, oh, what a wonderful sunny day, and it's raining, you know. The director doesn't agree with what I'm, the way my approach is, you know. And so I've kind of learned, you know, you take up energy and kind of fight that and say, damn it, he's not thinking the way I got to, you know, or do I just kind of, oh, this is kind of fascinating. These are, you know, another expression that comes to mind is dancing lessons from God. You know, this is the way the big, you know, spirit calls it. So rather than trying to fight that, kind of, you know, work with it and, you know, be blown around by it, you know.
And it sounds like in both of these instances, there's a preparation that takes place and then a kind of letting go of what it is you had expected to happen.
Yeah. And even, I mean, you know, that this kind of goes what I was saying before, and let go of your need to let go, too. So it's kind of a funny, you know, kind of a funny, you know, spin. I'm supposed to be let going, but I'm not letting go. And just kind of dig that, because that's as valuable as anything, you know. It's really what's going on, you know.
I'm speaking with Jeff Bridges and Bernie Glassman. They are the authors of The Dude and The Zen Master, which is from Blue Rider Press. One of the things that struck me in this book is the form, which is very unusual for a book. It really feels like, as we are right now, the two of you are having a conversation, and sitting across the table from you both, I can see how it's happening, because as you begin to talk, you look to each other and you're playing off of what the other person says. Did you go into this thinking this is going to become a book, or did you just say, let's record this and see what happens?
Well, I suggested let's do a book, but we had been doing this kind of rapping for quite a while. And when we get together, I mean, I love when we get together and have some time to rap like this, because it's always different. We don't prepare. We start and we go in different places. So I suggested, well, how about spending some time together and see if a book can come out of it? And we did. We spent 4 days. We were taped from morning to evening. We just talked. It wasn't any kind of big preparation each day, or after we had the morning session, we didn't prepare, well, let's now do it. We just went for 4 days, and then there was a lot of editing to make it into something that works well to the reader.
Yeah, Bernie's wife, Eve, did a great job of, you know, organizing the whole thing.
She's also a Zen teacher. She also is a lover of The Dude. She knows Jeff, and she knows me, and so she was able to work with the material and come up with questions. She's also a writer, so she could think it from the reader's standpoint, are there stuff here that needs to be explained a little bit more? But it's one of my joys of being with Jeff, because I've been teaching now for, I've been in Zen over 50 years. I've been teaching since 68. But it's rare to find somebody you can just rap with and have fun in how it moves, you know?
In the book, there's a part where, Jeff, you talk about some of the roles that you've played that have been people who most of us would say, I don't think I want to be in a room with that person. There are characters who've murdered people, one who's murdered his wife. But you talk about having to understand the humanity in that person. How do you go about doing that?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that we're all in it together. So, you know, I think that these people that kind of surface that represent kind of the darker side of each of us, that's something interesting for me as an actor to explore. And how do I go into it? Well, I guess I do it like I prepare for all, you know, for any role. I look into myself and figure out what are the aspects of myself that I can use in this character. What are the aspects of myself that I want to kick to the curb? You know, kind of, numb those sides. And then I start to look out in the world, and I notice when I'm preparing for a role, everything I see and experience is kind of through the filter of that role. So I'm saying, well, I can use that. So I get very, very observant that way. And, if you were asking particular, questions about the different characters, I could tell you. But I'm fascinated by those things that we are wanting to kick out of the party. You know, that guy is a bad guy. You know, he's a terrible guy. And people do these horrendous things. My God, you know.
And we want to assign it to someone else and to not see it in ourselves.
What comes to mind is this film that I made a few years ago. And Bernie was a consultant. Right. A consultant was Tron, sequel to Tron, and it's about, there's this character of Flynn is the main, my character, but his ego, Clue, is kind of a bad thing. That's something that, we were talking about, and it has a little bit to do with what we were talking about before, about this quiet, that's about the ego talking about, hey, don't you, this is what you ought to do. And that's something that we all, I know it myself. I say, God, I wish that guy would just shut up, let me get rid of the guy. Yeah. But he's here, that's part of it. That's what we have to deal with. We can't, commit apartheid in our own selves and saying that guy is a bad guy, we want him out, out. We have to include, that seems to be, when I do have that stillness, that's what seems to kind of surface, is that, here it is. This is here,
It's interesting hearing you say that, because I heard just this weekend that you are going to be the giver in the book, The Giver.
Yeah.
And in ways, that's a book about what happens when we put all of the suffering and the unpleasantness, we don't look at it, then we don't get to see the beauty either.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Bernie, when you look at this and look at, in the book, you talk about characters and all of us opening up to everyone else. And I know in this piece where it's talking about violence, which is something that you have looked at in the world, where do you go to be able to understand that piece of our lives as humans?
Yeah, so in my practice and in my life, what I've wound up doing, I wouldn't have thought of this 20, 30 years ago, something that I would be doing as part of my Zen practice, but now looking at what I've been doing, there, I go to places where there have been violence and all kinds of things that my mind cannot fathom. How does that go on? And I purposely will go there because I can't know anything. It's beyond what I can rationalize. And then I'll stay there, and I call it bearing witness. And so we've created these bearing witness retreats, and I wait to see what will happen. And that's a way for me to grow. That's a way for me to grow and to grok parts of myself that can do things that are unthinkable. For example, we've been doing a week-long retreat for 18 years now at Auschwitz, bringing together people that from all sides, children and grandchildren of SS officers and camp people, survivors and children of survivors and grandchildren of survivors, people from many different countries, and we'll share what we do to each other. It's a retreat about diversity. It's not about Auschwitz in particular, but it's about how we as humans deal with diversity. And now I'll be starting a bearing witness retreat in Rwanda. I was there recently. We'll do a retreat on the 20th anniversary of the genocide, which will be April 2014. And I met a woman who's and a man, a man who was Hutu, and his wife was Tutsi, and they had children. He killed his wife and his children because his children had Tutsi blood in them. Now, how can you imagine somebody that would kill their wife and their children? He thought he was purifying the race because they were called, the Tutsis were called cockroaches. And then I say, well, that's me. We're all interconnected. That's a part of me. How can I do that? I have no answers to that. So now I will go there and sit with people that did the killing, people that survived, people from Rwanda, people from the Congo, from Uganda, from France, from Belgium, that did set up all of these scenes. So my particular practice, I was thinking as Jeff was talking, he's playing these different roles with these guys, and I'm finding these kinds of people around the world and then going and spending time and seeing what will come up. What is there something I can do? And this it just gets shared among people. At Auschwitz, every year there's about around 150 people who come with us. So there's been thousands that have come and dealt with this diversity of life.
As I listen to both of you talk, I do hear through art, through stories, we can explore the parts of ourselves and of other people that, as you say, seem unknowable. And through the work that you're doing, Bernie, it sounds like that's what you're trying to understand the connection that you might have to someone who could do such a thing.
Yeah, not so much understand, but to grok it, because my sense is that we really are all one. That means that's all part of me. It's just like my cancer cells. We all have cancer cells. So it's part of me. How do I understand what's going on there, you know?
She said understand. You said no, not understand, grok. So what's the difference between understanding and grokking?
Understanding is somehow being an observer, sitting, watching what's happening and coming up with a rationale of what's going on.
Mm-hmm, thinking you know what is happening.
Now I figured it out, you know. But for me, the grokking is to sort of bear witness to it until all of a sudden I do something. I know it just happens. Now I'm doing something. And I can't tell you necessarily how that came about, but except for the fact that I stayed and bore witness to it, and then it arose.
Yeah. Not an intellectual thing.
Not an intellectual thing, an experiential thing.
I'm glad you asked that question because I was going to ask it. We just have a couple of minutes left. I know in this book you talked about cancer cells. You do talk a lot about conflict and about what happens in the world, and that this is not something, as you said earlier, Jeff, that we can just push aside and say, no, I don't want that to be part of myself. That conflict and things destroying other things are a part of what life is, which I think is hard for a lot of us to say, okay, I get that.
Yeah. And what are we going to do about, what do we do,
once we feel and know
once
that.
Once we feel that. I remember when I'm involved with ending a hunger, and I remember when I first got involved, I became aware of the enormous problem of world hunger and how there's enough food, we have enough money, we know how to end it. There are countries that have ended, but what's missing, and it's the political will that was just that isn't strong enough, and then of course the politicians represent us. So then we were asked, well, what are you personally willing to do now that this is the condition, this is the way it is? What are you going to do about it? Are you going to do just nothing about it and try to forget what you just found out, or are you going to do something about it and do something in a way that's not just kind of a you know, a gesture that scratches the guilt itch, but something that kind of fits in with your life that you can kind of sustain and is realistic. And so that was kind of my process in that. And that's what I do in other things in my life when I come upon them that's hard to grok. It's very challenging. Try to think about it. You know, what can I do that is in my rhythm? That is, you know, everybody has their limits, but within my limits, now that I know this, what can I do to kind of stretch it out a little bit? Do a little, you know, a little yoga on that thing.
And I'm watching you kind of get bigger in your chair.
Yeah, a little yoga.
And Bernie, we just have about 15 seconds, but do you have a thought that you want to end with?
Yeah, everything that we just said, that's nothing but just our opinions, man.
Well, Bernie Glassman, Jeff Bridges, thank you so much for coming in. I've been speaking with actor Jeff Bridges and Roshi Bernie Glassman. They've co-written a book called The Dude and the Zen Master. It's published by Blue Rider Press. And they'll be in conversation with Jamed Shaheen at the Union Square Barnes & Noble tonight at 7. Jeff and Bernie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.